Listener-supported St. Gabriel Catholic Radio AM 820 brings you Answering the Call, offering a glimpse into the spiritual journeys of local priests, deacons, and religious. And now, Answering the Call with Elizabeth Ficicelli.
Hi, and thanks for joining us on Answering the Call here on St. Gabriel Catholic Radio, AM 820, and streaming live on stgabrielradio.com. I'm your host, Elizabeth Ficicelli. If this is the first time you're listening to our program, Answering the Call is an opportunity for us to get to meet some of our priests and our deacons and our religious in the diocese and hear how they're answering calls for the church today. You know, and as Catholics, we are called to be missionary, to bring the good news to the world. And sometimes I think we can forget that because we live in this age and a culture that tells us we're supposed to be politically correct and not push our views on anyone. But nonetheless, we are called to evangelize and build the church in whatever way we can. And my guest today has had the experience of literally building the church in the faraway country of Pakistan. He's Father Stephen Fitzhenry. He's a Dominican friar, scholar, and the chaplain at the Moen Healthcare Center for the Dominican Sisters of Peace. And he is my guest today on Answering the Call. And we're so happy to have you here, Father.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming. And now, Father, I know you're a native of Cleveland, Ohio. And with a name like Fitzhenry, it sounds like perhaps your parents were a wee bit Irish?
A whole bit.
A whole bit Irish.
Both my parents are from Ireland.
Tell us about your family. Were Catholic growing up?
Oh, yeah, very, very Catholic. You know, from Ireland, you're Catholic. Well, at least from the South, anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, we were very, there were two of us, my brother and myself. He was 6 years older than I.
Did you practice the faith at home? Was there...
Not much, really. We used to say prayer, you know, at meals. That was about it. I mean, we didn't, I don't think my parents were fanatics, you know, so, but we always went to Catholic schools, you know, wherever we were.
And you have an endearing story of having a little altar in your bedroom.
That's right. I was a very pious child.
Tell us about your, how old were you?
As time went on. But I was a very pious child. Well, we had all kinds of, you know, my mother had a big Infant of Prague statue, you know, over the front room fireplace, and pictures all over the place. You know, every room had a cross in it. So, yeah, I was kind of fascinated with the saints, you know, and my relatives used to give me little books, you know, on religion and so forth. So I was a very pious little guy.
Did you, like, practice Mass, play Mass?
I did.
Mass,
I used to have my friends over. And we'd have Mass upstairs. So that's it. We had procession to the halls, you know.
Did you listen to their confessions?
No.
Now, you said, as you said, you were schooled in parochial school from first grade all the way through high school.
Yep.
And when you think back on those grade school years, how did that help your Catholic faith?
Well, you were surrounded. Those days, of course, you know, every classroom had a sister. And every sister was a vocation director, you know. So it was almost unusual that this one sister wouldn't say, now, how many are going to be sisters and how many are going to be priests? You know?
So, what kind of sisters were they?
My parents, of course, came and lived through the 30s, you know, the Depression area, which was really a bad time.
Mm-hmm.
And so they lived in rented houses until they bought their home in 1940. So we kind of moved to different places. So I had Ursulines, and in high school I had Sisters of Charity of Cincinnati.
Mm, okay.
Yeah. So I had the Ursulines and St. Joseph's Sisters in one place.
And they were all big on vocations. So they were planting the seeds, which is a good thing to do.
Yeah.
And you served on the altar, I would imagine.
I did.
And what was that like?
And that was also fascinating to watch, you know, the priest kneel down there and look up at the priest. You know, I was always kind of jealous that he used to have the chalice because we never got it those days.
No, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's pretty safe to say that this idea of priesthood was kind of intriguing to you as a young child.
Yeah, it was in the back of my mind, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But then in high school, it would kind of wore off. Kind of wears off, and this is so typical of so many of our guests on this show. There's other things that happen in high school.
Right. Well, the buddies I hung around with, five or six guys, you know, that we hung around with in the neighborhood, they all had, you know, dates, and so I had to, and so that's, you know, for dances or parties or whatever.
Okay, and that's kind of fun. And
sure.
Were you thinking of a career? Were you thinking about college? What you might want to like to do?
I got a little muddled for a while. I went with one girl. We used to go steady in those days,
mm-hmm.
you know, for about five months. And I remember one time we were in a hayride, and she started talking about the kids we were going to have, how many. And I thought to myself, I'm not ready for this.
Weren't ready to make that kind of commitment yet.
I kind of broke off with that girl.
But you would meet a young lady in high school.
I did.
That would actually end up playing a key role in your vocational direction.
That's right.
So tell us a little bit about that.
This one girl, I was so attracted to her. And I just couldn't imagine that she would think of me at all. But I did ask her out a couple times. We went out a couple times. And then it was interesting that around Christmas, I think, one of her friends came up and said, Jack, I was called Jack at that time, Jack, are you thinking of asking Marion to the prom, you know? And I said, yeah, why? She said, because she's afraid that she wants to go with you, and she's afraid that, you know, she's going to be asked by this other guy.
So hurry
next
up.
Next day I asked her. And then that was the beginning. And then for about a year and a half, I was really in love with her. I really was. And she said she was in love with me. Love is a great. I learned what love is all about from that experience.
An important life experience.
It is.
And then she had a discernment.
I went away after high school to the University of Dayton, and I used to come home on weekends. We'd hitchhike up those days. I didn't have a car. And sometimes we'd go out, or like Christmas or Easter, and we're going to Mass with the corsage and all that stuff. And when I got back that June, she said, Jack, before we go any further, I really want to tell you something. I said, okay. She says, I've been thinking of trying the convent, you know. And
did that come out of the blue?
It came out of the blue, because I had never talked about my ideas of priesthood, and she had never talked about this. So it was really a surprise, you know. So in a way, though, it kind of woke me up. Is God trying to tell me something? You know, is God? Is this the way that, you know, God is leading me somehow? And so I said, well, okay, I'm going to try it myself. You know, and so I wrote away. I had read up on the Dominicans and met some of them very briefly, and so I applied. And I went, they used to send you to Providence College. We have a college up in Providence at that time. It was like a postulancy. And so went there. There was a big crowd. There were about 40, 50 guys up there. They kept you there for 2 years in those days. Now they only accept you after college. But so I went up. And after the first year, I came back. And one day her parents called me up and said, you know, Jack, Marion is leaving the convent. Would you drive us down to pick her up from Cleveland, Cincinnati? You know, that's how close we were. And I said, yeah, sure. So I did. Went down, picked her up. It was a very quiet drive back. You can imagine, 5 or 6 hours. I never asked her why. We went out a couple of times that summer. But actually, I just felt that I had made this step. And in fact, I kind of maybe always felt that way. My biggest difficulty was making the first step.
Right.
And then I'd do it.
And then this is how God did that first step for you, that this was the situation that would you know, impel you to at least begin the discernment process, which you might not have done otherwise.
Yeah.
So
that following Christmas, I came home and I was asked her out for New Year's. She says, I'm sorry, I already have a date. That was crushing.
Yeah. Oh, I imagine. And so you would continue on your discernment path.
Yep.
And you, as you said, you first went through postulancy, and then you would start the novitiate. And you had a particularly trying time about the time you were entering the novitiate.
Yeah, my father had just died 3-4 months before that. And so am I going to do it? Am I not going to do it? You know, so I talked to my mother about it, and she said, hey, she said, you live your life. You know, I don't want any responsibility of what you do, you know, in your life, with your life. So I thought to myself, well, I'll go, and if I make it, fine. If I don't make it, well, then I'll know, you know, into the division. So I left, and I went in.
And then something happened with your brother.
My brother had died 4 years before that.
So, okay, so that was all around that same time.
In an accident, yeah.
So I can really understand why you were second-guessing about leaving, because you're anxious about leaving your mom behind alone.
Yes.
But it sounds like God would take care of her, huh?
He did. So. It was funny. I left 51. I came back from Pakistan in 80. All that time, she was fine. She lived more like as a nanny and in living, living in rather as a nanny, and helped the girls grow up of the families. And in 1980, I came back. I thought I was going to take care of her. Now, within a year and a half, she was dead.
Wow.
God had taken care of her all that time.
That's right.
I thought I was going to take care of her.
Yeah. But he was just reminding you, no, I'm in charge, as he often does.
Amazing.
So there were some 31 guys in your novitiate class. That was a big number. And in those early years of discernment and formation, did it challenge your calling? Did it affirm your calling? How did you find it?
The fact of what?
For when you were in your novitiate, at this point in the formation process. I know a lot of our priest guests have shared that there were challenges in that time, second guessing their vocation.
Oh, yeah, sure. I mean, are you going to go through this thing? Are you going to the routine of, saying office and the routine of class and routine of, people leaving, people being asked to leave? It was challenging.
We're talking with Father Stephen Fitzhenry. He's the chaplain at Moen Healthcare Center for the Dominican Sisters of Peace, and he's our guest today on Answering the Call here on St. Gabriel Catholic Radio AM 820. And I'm your host, Elizabeth Ficicelli. So, Father Fitzhenry, you continued your years of formation. You spent a year in Springfield and two more years in Somerset, pursuing your studies in philosophy, among other things. And then you took your final or solemn vows. And is that when you receive your religious name, or did that happen earlier?
No, you receive your religious name when you enter the ordination.
Okay. Was Stephen your choice?
No.
Or how'd that come about?
they told you you could suggest a name. Okay. So I went in to the novice master. Of course, you're kind of frightened of the novice master,
Yeah.
So I wanted to name my father Patrick. He said, no, you can't have Patrick. I said, okay. I said, how about Joseph? No, my brother. No, you can't have Joseph. Okay. How about Timothy? That was the parish I belonged to. No, you can't have Timothy. So I started going through the apostles, and no, you can't have that. No, you can't have that. No. Then finally, the name of the place, the priory up there, was St. Stephen. So I said, how about Stephen? He said, yes, you may have Stephen. Our last Stephen left.
Oh.
That was encouraging.
Okay.
The reason was, I think, is because in Washington, we had 4 years in Washington. And I think there were so many in every class, so it's a big crowd,
Yeah.
That they wanted to make sure that nobody duplicated the name for laundry purposes. At least that's what I feel was.
Oh, it's a very practical. Well, did any of the St. Stephens become spiritual companions for your journey? Did you develop a relationship with them, or was this simply a practical name?
It was a practical name. It was a nice name. You should hear some of the names the guy's got,
That's true. It is a nice name. It does. Father Stephen Fitzhenry. It just rolls off the tongue.
That's right.
From there, then, it was on to Washington, D.C. for 4 years to earn your theology degree.
Yep.
And you were ordained in 1958 and earned another degree right away, your licentiate in sacred theology, the STL.
Yeah.
And then you had your eye on doing some missionary work.
Yes.
So talk about that time of life.
Well, we opened a mission to Pakistan. We were invited by the Roman Italian Dominicans to come over to help them. A new section of Pakistan had opened up, and they asked us to come over to take it. So we took 1956, and some of the guys ahead of me, were starting to go, and I kind of was grabbed by it. I was just, I just felt that I wanted to give everything. I wanted to follow Jesus as close as I could, and so I volunteered as well.
Did you have any preconceived notions of what it would be like in Pakistan?
Nope.
What did you find there? Were you surprised by anything when you got there? Or?
Yep. Well, Pakistan, of course, it was just an emerging country at the time. India got freedom, the subcontinent got freedom in 1948, I think it was. And so the division of the country then took place, and so they were striving, with great difficulty.
And at the time, even back then, 98% Muslim?
Yes.
So very heavily Muslim.
Yep.
And what was the purpose of you being there? What were the community
to found the church, make foundation of the church. Yep. The territory that we were given in the middle of the country is called the city of Multan. An ancient city, really, was the size of Ohio and India and together.
Okay.
It was that size. So some of the places, cities in that area that were given had never had a Christian presence except for the people, some people themselves. So going in and building churches and schools and, you know, hopefully getting sisters in convent to come there for teaching and so forth, that, it was a big job.
What about the language? Was that a barrier?
Language, we used to learn Urdu.
Okay.
Which is like the educated language. But the country is divided into many languages. You know, Punjabi, for instance, is big. Pushtu, Baluchi, Sindhi. Yeah, there's all kinds of languages there.
So at the time, and you were there from 1960 to 1980.
That's right.
A period of 20 years. So in the beginning, was it foreigners that were really, you know, teaching there and in the seminaries? And
Well, there was only one major seminary in Karachi, because you didn't have that many, you know, okay, seminarians from the whole country. There were six dioceses in it, and they were all, except one when I got there, one had was a Pakistani bishop, but the rest are all foreigners. But by the now, it's all Pakistani.
Okay.
All the bishops, all the priests, all the sisters.
Which really sounded like that was your goal.
That's right. And that's what a missionary should do.
So they could best serve their people.
Go over there, found the church, get out. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you have any experience any violence or resistance while you were over there?
Not while I was there. It was pretty good. There was only one scary time when, remember when they took over the embassy in Tehran, the American embassy, and they were threatening them all? You know?
I do remember because my college had a lot of Iranian students, so I do remember the Ayatollah Khomeini and turbulent here.
It was 78.
Yes, that's correct.
And Voice of America and BBC both broadcast this appeal by Muslims in Tehran that wherever you have Americans, Muslims have Americans in their territory, they should arrest them and take them into captivity. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So I was, oh my God. So I went down to the police lieutenant, whatever he was, downtown in this town, Bahawalpur. And I said, you know what? He said, oh, don't worry. We have your escape route planned. Oh boy, we're
that's
in big
comforting
trouble.
But you didn't need your escape route.
No.
Thank God.
Work. But they had soldiers all around the compound, though. They put soldiers all around the compound.
Yeah. Okay. And during those 20 years, you were able to come back to the United States for a brief
time?
We
got home every 4 years or 6 months.
Okay.
But most of that time I was spent going around, you know, making appeals, especially for money for the mission.
But it sounds like you were always delighted to go back to Pakistan. That had become your home, it seems.
Well, it may be what I am in many ways.
Like how? Tell us how.
Well, I mean, you have to depend a lot on God in those situations. I mean, it's just not you doing this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm kind of getting a little teary right now, but it did.
Yeah. How was it to say goodbye after 20 years?
It was awful. In 1960, I'd been superior there for eight. There was about 30 guys there, Americans. It was superior for 8 years in 1980. It was like the end of my term. We were getting Pakistani Dominicans coming in. They were about five or six ordained, more being trained. My mother had asked me if I'm never going to come home. So I made up my mind that I would, you know. But saying goodbye was tough.
Yeah. That's a long time. 20 years is a long time.
Yeah.
And a big part of your priesthood, as you said. So you came back to the United States, and Dominicans have provinces, and you're a member of the Eastern Province, which is headquartered in New York.
Yep.
You have elections to assign people to certain posts, and you're also known to move around a lot because you have the spirit of being missionary as Dominicans. So when you came back from Pakistan, you were elected to the position of novice master for 8 years, first in Dover.
I was appointed, yeah.
Yeah, and then...
At first in Dover, just outside Boston, and then they moved to Cincinnati, which where it is now.
How'd you find the men entering the novitiate at that point different than how it was for you?
Well, there weren't as many, for one thing. Although now, recently, these last two or three years, we've been getting big crowds, like 15 to 20 novices a
year.
Yeah, amazing. In fact, they're thinking of moving it now in Cincinnati. They don't have room down there.
Well,
anyway, how were they different? Well, we were very conservative entering the novitiate. I mean, you know. But the guys now have, some of them are doctorates and masters, and, you know, they're older and more mature, and I think than we were, you know.
Yeah. So they're older, you know, more degrees behind them, maybe some professional work behind them.
Yep.
And,
yes.
So probably knowing what, getting into this kind of maybe a little more confident about what they're doing. Yeah, sometimes they take people so young.
That's right.
You haven't had that much life experience yet, but that's it sounds right. like, and we're hearing that not just in Dominicans, but other orders as well. Mm-hmm. So you were novice master, and then you served down in Charlottesville, Virginia, at the University of Virginia, where you were pastor and chaplain
right.
to students and to the community.
Yep.
What was it like there?
Great. Yeah. I was 8 years novice master, and then after that, it's a funny story. I had planned to go on this sabbatical. See, I was going to go up to this place in New Brunswick and then Louvain, and I spread it out to the provincial. It took me about a half hour to tell him all I wanted to do. And I said, what do you think of that? And he said, well, I think you should go to Charlottesville. So that was that.
What was he saying by that?
Charlottesville is a marvelous place. The University of Virginia is a great school. Of course, one of the premier schools of the country, really. It's always in the top 20. And marvelous, marvelous. Beautiful location.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Oh. So that was there for 8 years.
And then after that, you served in your former novitiate, which was now a retreat house.
That's right.
And you were putting on programs there for the Dominican sisters for about 7 years.
Any kind of sisters from all over the world.
Oh, any kind of sisters.
We got 30, 35, 40 sisters a semester.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you did that until that facility closed, and then you came to Columbus.
That's right.
And you're over at the Dominican Mother House that was once called St. Mary the Springs.
Yep.
Now it's known as the Dominican Sisters of Peace. And they have gathered Dominican sisters from several states, all different areas that are... They're coming together there, is that correct?
They came together, I don't know how many years now, maybe 3 or 4 years. There were 7 communities of sisters because the sisters' vocations were going down.
Mm-hmm.
So there were 7 communities that joined and one under the title of Sisters of Peace, Dominican Sisters of Peace.
So what do you do there? What when you came here, what year was it that you came here?
I came here first to the Mother House. I had come before Dover closed. I came here and give it a retreat with another sister. And while I was here, they were just opening St. Martin de Porres Conference mm-hmm. Center. And so a couple of sisters said, this would be a great place to come, And I said, oh, so there was an interest there of coming here and of participating in that, which I did. Gave some programs there. Gave some programs over in ODU to another Dominican office that was there to the college. And so it was good. And I wrote some articles and were published. And so it was a good time.
What kind of topics did you speak and write on?
You name it, mostly religious stuff, of course,
mm-hmm.
But Dominican spirituality, Celtic spirituality, a lot of the retreat work that I had done, I put it on paper.
Oh, okay.
And yeah.
Wonderful. And now, more recently, you're at the Moen Healthcare Center.
That's right.
And this is a facility for not just Dominican sisters, but there's Dominican priests there. There's family members, too. Is that what I was reading on the website?
A few, yeah, very few, yeah.
And these people are pretty much at end stages of life or different stages or...
Yeah, my stage.
Your stage. Well, you're very active,
my
Father.
My stage, you know. Their sisters as old as the late 90s, and people who are ill.
And what is it like working there for you?
I feel I'm a presence. That's really what it comes down to. It's very quiet. It's for a retired person. Really, I am. I mean, I'm 83. I'm not going to be hopping around places. It's a presence more than anything else. To walk the halls a little bit, say hello here and say hello there and be available for when the sisters die.
Do you do much interaction with family members that might be coming to visit, or not too much?
No, not that much, actually. If they do, I do, but there's not that much that do come.
Now, you just celebrated a very big milestone a couple years ago, your 50th year of ordination.
5 years ago.
How'd you celebrate that?
It was a whoopee time. My classmates were trying to get together and where we're going to go, so I suggested, well, if they wanted to come here, the sisters would be given room and board and... if they fly in, the airport's nearby, I can pick them up. They don't have to spend much money. So they decided to come here. There were about 8 of them, I think, that came. So we had a great time.
How nice. 50 mm-hmm. years is amazing. That's can you imagine that you've been a priest for 50 years? That's just incredible.
Well, you look in the mirror and you say, 50 years.
Do you miss the traveling and the living abroad?
Well, I'll tell you, it's hard to do that anymore when you get up in age again. Last August, a good friend of mine, another Dominican, came to me and said, I know you know a lot about Ireland, which I have. I stopped there many times going back and forth to Pakistan. He said, would you mind taking my mother and myself on a tour? And I'll pay your way. I have a lot of airline miles. I said, oh, okay, I can do that, you know. So we went over. I was over there for almost 3.5 weeks, and they were there for about 10 days. I showed them around. But, you know, just walking, and it's tiresome.
Yeah.
It really is tiresome.
It is.
You don't have the same energy.
You know? I know. Well, you know, Father Fatin, we are so blessed that you're in the diocese and that you are as active as you are. I know the reason I know you personally is because you help out at St. Pius, my parish in Reynoldsburg, and you're there pretty much every Saturday night or at least during the weekend, and you're a great confessor and a great preacher. So you, so we're blessed to have you. Can you end us with your blessing, Father?
Okay. Lord God, we ask you to bless this program. We ask you to bless all of us because we are your children and you are our Father. Remember us. Keep Jesus in our heart and the Spirit inspiring us. We ask this in Christ our Lord.
Amen. Thank you again, Father Stephen Fitzhenry, for joining us, inspiring us with your faith journey as all of us are seeking to hear God's call in our own lives. I'm Elizabeth Ficicelli, host for Answering the Call on St. Gabriel Catholic Radio, AM 820. Join us on Tuesdays and Sundays at 12:30 for another edition. Have a great week. God bless.
Answering the Call is a production of listener-supported St. Gabriel Catholic Radio, AM 820. Archives of Answering the Call with Elizabeth Ficicelli are available at stgabrielradio.com. This